And very, very good on the clock information.
Eddie, well,
go ahead, Ed.
I'm told that that was not going into our archive. So maybe we should mention this again, that first we talked about LS and then about date when you first log in and how the date commands will show you the system's idea of what time it is and that it has Linux makes its best guess of what time it ought to be because motherboard CMOS clocks are notoriously inaccurate. So Linux does its best to correct for that, but you need to check to see if your time is off by however many seconds.
If I need to set the date and time, how do I do that if I don't have access yet to the, you know, say my cron job hasn't been done and I need to set the clock?
Okay, as the system administrator, what we call root, you run, I believe it's in size SBM, HW clock, HWCLOCK.
Mm-hmm.
And that command, it tells the system to deal with the clock. There's a flag for reading the clock, but the flag to set it, I believe, is dash S, which says take the system time and put it into the hardware clock. That's how you set the hardware clock. But if you just want to set the running system's time, you can do that as root by saying date and just give it the date and time you want it set to. And there's a flag that goes with that. It tells it to put that in system time. But without a man page in front of me, I'm drawing a blank right now.
Okay. I understand. There's just a lot to know, isn't there, Ed?
Yep. There's a lot of this stuff, and we don't all know it all the time.
Well, I tell you what, this is great, and right now I've got a problem with my modem. I want to be able to forward some ports, and I'll talk about that later, so I can talk to my buddies on the net that can help me get my Debian updated and my program updated. And once we get that done, I hope to get a system over here so everybody can see how I do Linux. Okay, we have list and clear and date, and what are some of the other beginning shell commands that we can...
something you most probably want to have is instead of... Well, there is more, which is a paging command, but there's also less. More is an older command, and less is the newer one, and less is more advanced than more.
Okay.
They were trying to be funny.
Go ahead.
Less allows you to do things like have lines that are too long for your screen. Go off to the right of the screen. They do not have to wrap around. And then you can use the left and right arrows to move the screen left and right to be able to focus in on the portions of the line that you're interested in.
What happens if I do a less command and I send that to a file? What would that look like? It certainly won't wrap, will it? It'll just go on and on and on.
Right.
Okay.
Less if its output is not a TTY, a terminal that a person would be sitting at, it treats it just like cat does. It just copies its input to its output and doesn't change it any. So there's no pausing for a page.
Standard in to standard out.
Yeah.
Okay. And cat means concatenate. Yes, concatenate. Well, I'll tell you, I'm surprised I remembered that. Okay. And we'll get into that in a little bit. So the cat is... we could actually read with the cat command, can't we?
Yes. Mm-hmm. A small file will be displayed on the screen with the cat. And Linux has, if you hold down the shift key and a page up you back up a screen at a time for in the history. There's, I think, about 200 lines worth of history so that you could actually cat files that are bigger than, longer than your screen length is and still be able to see them.
Well, that's kind of neat. Okay, well, that's we want to be people to be able to read documentation when they get on the system, because it can seem overwhelming at first, can't it?
Yes, it can.
So we want them to be able to read, and read. The more, which is better, actually, the more or the less command for a beginner? In other words, what I'm asking for is formatting, because being that I teach formatting for a living, that's a very important thing. If we're going to read a lot of things, would more be better, or cat be better, or less be better?
I prefer less, mm-hmm. because for me, when I do a search for a string within less, it highlights the string by putting it in inverse video.
Oh.
So I can immediately see where the matches are in a file. And if there's more than one match on the current screen, all of them are inverse video. So I see them all in spite of them being hidden amongst a lot of text.
So that can, yeah. For example, you're saying you can do searches in that file, but you'd do them with what, grep, or can you actually do them within less?
Within less.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, less has some searching ability that is not in the other editors normally. For example, you can say, find me the first line that does not contain Kurt, or whatever your search string is,
mm-hmm.
because you have, or say you're looking at a log file and it has today's date, and you keep seeing today's date, every line, and so you want to find something that is not today's date, so you say slash for I'm going to search.
Mm-hmm.
Exclamation point for not, and then it'll change the prompt from searching for to search not searching for, and then you give it the string you want to match, and that's really the string that you want to find the next line that does not have that string.
Oh, no, that's interesting. I noticed they used to do that in the old version of Lynx. You'd hit a slash and it would say, okay, what URL do you want to find?
Yeah.
So is that a part of the less command, or is that just, was less actually made of the Lynx stuff? Or is that just something?
Well, it just so happens that lots of commands use the same syntax for introducing the concept of search. For example, the text editors VI and ED and EX and several others all use slash as the indicator that I want to start a search.
Okay. But back to the shell. We're kind of getting away from the shell.
Okay.
When we type a command into the shell, what happens?
The executable for that is given the standard in, standard out, standard error that you have on your own TTY if you don't redirect it somewhere. And then it is what's called exec. Exec is where the current running program is cloned. Its memory is copied exactly, and then the new command that you're about to run gets read in on top of that, and then that one executes. And meanwhile, the one who started this, unless you do a trick to put it in what's called the background, your command line waits for that subcommand to execute And when it finishes, it will then come back and you will see the next prompt for your command line.
Okay, now let's talk about that. When you say the prompt, I mentioned this a little earlier, so let's go over.
Okay.
For a new user, what is the prompt? Now, you and I have been around computers, and we know what that is. Some people may not, because they were in Windows. Hello. They were into Windows, so they may not know what a prompt is.
Okay. A prompt is a sort of meant to be a reminder to you that the computer is ready to accept more commands. So you get a symbol or some string that you can identify that says, okay, it's waiting for my next instruction.
Okay.
That's a prompt.
That's the prompt, and usually what the prompt might look like is, as I said before we started archiving, /USR, or /user, as we say, /home, /Charlie Brown. And that would be the Charlie Brown, that would be the account name, usually. And so that would be the prompt. Now, you could change the prompt anything you want, can't you, Ed?
Yes, it's... The prompt is a specified name within the shell that you're executing, and it's ordinarily its name is capital P, capital S, 1.
Mm-hmm.
And there are in Bash 3 prompts: PS 1, 2, and 3. And they are used for different things. There's PS1 is the one you see at the normal commands when you're ready for another command prompt or another command at the current level.
Okay.
And other prompts are used, for example, when you're inside a for loop or an if statement. No, not if. Just a for loop, and some of the other things that are expecting multiple lines before they complete. So they prompt with a different prompt to tell you, to let you know that it will continue accepting input until you give it the closing of what it's expecting, and then that will close out and you'll go back to the higher level.
Okay, let's talk about levels. You've mentioned levels twice. The /USR/home/Charlie Brown prompt. That's the level 1 prompt, correct?
Yes.
And that is the highest or lowest level prompt?
That's the highest.
Okay. Now, when you say highest level, that means it has priority over all the others, correct? Or is that just the first prompt? When we say highest level, what does that mean?
Well, it's the first one that a user sees.
Okay, so it really isn't a level. It's the first prompt and probably the most used prompt.
Yes.
Okay, now the second level prompt, what is that one?
That would be like, for example, if you have a string that you're typing in and you have a quote to begin quoting the string, so you can pass embedded spaces or embedded new lines as part of the string.
Okay.
Then when you go to, when you hit new line inside that quote, you are now at the second level, and it prompts you with the PS2 string.
So that would be similar to what ED would have, or the old edit, or the old Edlund would have, in DOS, when you had each line was numbered and you had a colon standing there. You had a colon there and you typed and you'd hit the enter and then it'd be a colon, or maybe you'd have a line number. Is that what it kind of like?
Well, not having ever messed with Edline, so mm-hmm. Edlin or whatever it's called, I cannot confirm nor deny.
Okay.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
As I said in one of these interviews with you, I deliberately avoided microcomputers until I ran across Linux so that I knew I could have a system at home that ran a Unix-like operating system, which is what I had been using at work for years.
There you go, folks. A living testimony. There's the man. There's the man that uses Linux and would not have anything else. So, anyway, go ahead, Ed. Now we're at level two.
Yeah.
Okay.
So when you hit and enter inside the quoted string, that prompts you for the next line inside that quoted string, and you can do multiple lines. And then when you type the closing quote, whether it be all by itself on a line or after some more text, then you put the closing quote and you hit enter, then you're no longer at level two. You go back to the PS1 prompt.
Now, what starts level two?
That is the opening quote.
Okay. So in a search string, you'd always want to use quote. You'd always want to use a quote, and that starts your other prompt.
Not always on a search. Some searches don't need quotes. The reason you would need quotes in a search is because you have what's called a meta character, a character that has special meaning to the shell inside the string. The meta characters are like space, tab, or question mark, or semicolon, or open or close paren, open and close square bracket, asterisk or star.
Mm-hmm.
All of those would need to be quoted before they could be put into a string.
Okay, but what I'm asking is, when you're at the level one prompt,
yeah,
and you're going to go to level two, what would be the reason, and how would you do it?
Well, because, for example, you have a string that, say you're going to put a string into a variable, and you say your variable name, Cindy, equal, quote, line one, enter, line two, enter,
right.
Line three, close quote, and now lines one, two, and three are all inside the variable Cindy with their embedded new lines.
Okay. That is level two.
Yeah.
Okay.
And level three is for, like, if in the shell you can do what's called a read. You say read space and a variable name, and it will then accept a line for what you're reading. And an option, at least, is a prompt for that. And I believe that PS3 is used for that.
Mm-hmm.
So you can change the individual prompts. Like the PS3, you could say time, question mark, as your thing that you're in a shell script. Say you get to a point, you say read space time. And just before that, you would have wanted to change the PS3 to be equal to time question mark so that what the user will see is the script runs along and suddenly it says time question mark. And now you're expected to enter a time and hit the enter key. And then the script will continue on.
Okay. I get you. Well, that's kind of neat, Ed. And those are very simple commands. What What other types of simple commands can we teach tonight?
Well, let's see. We talked about date.
Jobs, maybe? And, jobs? Jobs might be a little more complicated.
Yeah, jobs, I think, is a little more complicated than we wanted to talk
okay.
about. How about sort?
Okay, yeah.
Sort, by default, accepts a file name and then puts on a standard out the alphabetic sort of that file. Yeah. It can accept modifiers. For example, dash n would tell it to sort these numerically so that 9 comes before 13.
Right.
Whereas if just sort without the dash n, the 1 is less than the 9, which would the first character of the strings would be compared, and you would say the 1 is less, and therefore, the 1 is less, and therefore 13 would come out before 9 would.
Aha.
So you tell it it's numeric, and it says, oh, well, I don't stop at just the first character. I look for
the entire number.
Non-number, and see where the numerically they come out, and therefore 9 comes before 13.
Now, if you do a sort space dash A, that's probably for alphabetic.
Which is the default.
Uh-huh.
That you get without having to give it any kind of flag at all. But you can do hyphen K tells it to use a key.
Mm-hmm.
So you can say dash K 3 for the third word or field of this line is the most important thing to sort by, space dash K 1 in, so that the third field is sorted alphabetically.
Mm-hmm.
And then within equals of the third field, the first one is compared numerically and put in that order.
So you can get quite sophisticated even with simple commands.
Yes.
Sort.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it takes some experimentation for you to be able to get exactly the kind of output you'd like from sort. Or it takes practice at knowing how it's going to behave. So you have to invoke it quite a few times to see how it changes behavior when you give it different keys.
Now, if I want to practice on a file, is there a file on the system, say, that I could practice on? Or do you build one up and then practice?
Well, I suppose you could build one up, but there is one that's available on every system. It's called /etc/hosts,
mm-hmm.
And that lists the IP addresses and names of systems that your computer knows about. And usually that contains at least localhost and maybe your own IP and several IPs of machines within your local network.
Yeah. Now, /etc.
Yes.
That's a weird sounding subdirectory. What does that do?
Well, etc is an abbreviation for etc.
Okay.
And it's where the system configuration files are kept.
Ah.
Unix and Linux are very much configurable. And each user can alter their own environment and boot sequence and so forth. What happens when they log in? The global ones that affect all the users are kept in ETC. And ordinarily, ordinary users like your Charlie Brown can read those files but cannot change them. Only root can change them.
Okay. Alrighty, back to shell. Now, the shell can help us manage files very well, can't it?
Yes. Yes. One of the meta characters that I talked about before was, is, greater than. The greater than sign is a symbol to the shell to redirect its standard output into a file.
Okay, that's
so that everything that is typed by the user or is output from, like, the output of a sort command, you can say sort space slash etc slash host space greater than slash sorted, S-O-R-T-E-D, and it will then sort the ETC host and put the output into a file named sorted in your current directory.
Yeah, that's very nice. And that's something that's easy to use. By the way, if you're interested in the stuff that Ed talked to, he said, well, I talked about that before. We do have the archives of the talks on the web. So I'll give you that. Make sure you have a pencil handy. Okay, so we've got this. We got sort. We have
the greater than to divert output into a file. There's a corresponding one called less than.
I've seen that. Yeah,
it says take input from a file and give it to the standard in of this command.
Now, let's talk a little bit about standard in, standard out. Now, without getting real technical, what does that mean? Because everybody talks about it at Linux meetings. You got to send it to standard out there. And so what is all that? One of them is the screen, one of them is the keyboard, basically. Is that right?
Well, ordinarily, standard in is your keyboard and standard out is your screen. Those are they go through your device, which is normally called a TTY. The reason for TTY is because that was an abbreviation of teletype, and the original systems interacted with the user via teletype.
Model 28s or 33s, actually, yes. 33 teletype. And it ran ASCII.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so, by the way, another one of the commands that you can run at the command prompt is TTY. And it will then tell you what device you're talking to at the moment, which is if you're on a Linux system at one of the consoles, it would be slash dev slash tty like 0101. There are so many Unixes I have to, I can't recall if Linux puts the leading zero there or not, but there are multiple consoles available. You can do and hold down the Alt key and hit F2, F3, so forth, on up to F12, and those are called Alt screens. They then will prompt you for another login, leaving your first login, which is Alt F1, still logged in. You can then move on to others, log in, and do other things from them. And then if you run a command that is taking too long on a particular one, you can then switch all screens over to one of the others, which is currently idle, and work from there.
Now, you'd have to log in each time.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
But you can be logged in on all 12 alt screens at the same time. Some of them could even be as different users.
Oh, now that would be interesting. So we're actually, let's get this clarified here. We're not like Windows. Windows claims to be a multitasking system, right?
Yes.
But they're not, are they? All they're doing is sharing the clock. They're really not multitasking, are they? Or am I? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Since Win95, they are truly multitasking.
Ah, okay.
Prior to NT and Win 2000, they were not multi-user.
Ooh.
They were multitasking, but not multi-user. Unix and Linux have been multitasking and multi-user from the day one.
So in other words, if I've got several screens open, and I've done this actually, one screen has a text editor in it, one screen has conversation software that I communicate with my friends over the internet, another one has a web page up, and it's all really cool because it's all shell driven and it's all commands and it's all, you know, you can, in 32 megs of RAM, I've been able to have 3 and 4 of these alt screens up doing different things at a time.
Yes. Yes.
Try that with Windows, folks.
I was chatting with a gentleman one time and happened to do an uptime command on my system. Uptime returns the number of users logged into the system and what the system load is and the last time it was rebooted.
Oh.
Or how long ago it was to reboot. So anyway, I did an uptime and I happened to send the output to him and he said, that's 11 users on your box. Is that you? How many other people are using this? I said, that's all me. He said, you can't possibly be using all 11 logins at once.
And you can log in as Ed on all of them.
But yeah, I was using 4 of them to read messages at the same time because it took time to download a message. So I would go to a different alt screen and read one while one of the others was downloading.
Isn't that something? You must have been on dial-up.
Yes.
Wow. So now what are you running? You're not running dial-up, so now what are you running?
I'm running Roadrunner.
Isn't that wonderful? I've had Roadrunner before on Linux, and it just runs fabulously.
It's extremely fast.
As a matter of fact, when you download something and you listen to your drive, it just sounds like you're on the network. I have DSL now. It's fast enough. I just need to get my modem access code so I can turn off, forward my ports because my friends and I can't talk on my voice chat software because I can talk out, but it won't let me talk in. It won't let me hear in, so I've got to find out why. But anyway, yeah, Linux is just real cool that way, and I like it because it's really command line driven, and the shell just makes things very nice. Uptime, boy, isn't that something? And you can even tell the system to do things at certain times, and it will actually do them. It won't hang like Windows does. Boy, I'll tell you.
Yes.
Go ahead.
The daemon or service that runs commands at a particular time is called cron. Cron runs things repeatedly, like every day at 2 o'clock,
mm-hmm.
Or once every week or something like that.
For example, if you wanted it to set the time every week, you could tell it to set the time every week.
Yes. Although once a week is probably not frequently enough. You probably want that at least once a day. Mm-hmm. And on most of the systems that I run, I set it to be once an hour.
Really?
Yes. Because I hate when clocks are drift much, and clocks on PCs are notoriously bad.
Uh-huh.
I have known some PCs to drift as much as 4 minutes in one day. And that just irritates
Why?
Me no end.
What, is it because of the crystal?
Yes, it's really bad crystals.
That's what I thought. And of course, being a ham radio operator, that would have been the first thing I suspected was the crystal.
Yeah. Well, they're the cheapest crystals that motherboard makers could buy, so they're not high quality.
And the bad thing is they're solder in.
Yes.
You can't remove them because they're not expecting them to be removed. You could probably put together a crystal socket. What are those things, a 20-meg crystal or something like that? 18-meg crystal or some weird thing. But anyway, we'll get into that later. Shell. Let's say I want to see what shell I'm running. How do I do that? Because we're talking about shell commands.
Okay.
And go ahead. I'm sorry, Ed.
The shell has what's called an environment. The environment is certain variables that are passed from the shell to other commands that you run. And one of the environment variables is shell. If you do echo space dollar sign, which is another one of those meta characters, and this time we're not hiding it inside quotes. So you say dollar sign, capital S, capital H, capital E, capital L, that, and then enter, and that will tell you the path name of your current shell.
Oh.
Which in Linux is usually /bin/bash.
Bash. Okay. Now that's different than /user/local/bin.
Yes.
Okay. Just want to make sure because you got more than one bin directory there, and I want to make sure that people understand when Ed gives you a path, please listen up because there are more than one bin directory in a Linux system. There's /bin, and that is the global binary directory. /usr/local/bin is where all the local accounts store their binaries. Is that correct?
It's customizations for this machine.
Okay.
That is customizations that all the users would be able to see. You can also have a bin directory that's private to you or to you and some friends of yours by having a bin directory that's in your login directory.
So Charlie Brown could have one under his.
And then you modify the path environment variable to include Charlie Brown's home directory bin as part of its path. And so it goes and looks in that directory for commands that Charlie knows about that
nobody else does.
Everybody else does.
Okay.
As I said, Unix and Linux are very much configurable. They empower the user. That's one of the things that irritated me about Windows and why I refused to deal with it was because with Windows, it was, to me at least, always seemed like it was somebody out there, Microsoft or somebody, trying to prevent me from using the machine the way I wanted to. They wanted me to only use it the way they thought I should be using it.
Well, and the reason for that is because that's how they make money. So, you know, that's exactly right. So, again, to kind of recap on this, the best thing to do is to look at the info pages on Bash, and it'll probably give you a lot of information about the Bash.
Yes. Yes. The man page for Bash is quite long, but is not very detailed. The info page gives you a whole lot more information and examples.
If I'm a beginner, would it would be better actually to use them, because we covered this last week just a little bit. Now, if we want to find out what the prompt is, we just do an echo space dollars, all in caps, prompt, and hit an enter, and it should give us the prompt. Is that correct?
Remember, the level one prompt is capital P, capital S, one.
Mm-hmm.
And the three prompts are PS1, PS2, and PS3.
Mm-hmm.
Again, those are cap, PS, and cap.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And there's also a PS without a number. I've seen that referring to job status. That's a little different, isn't it?
Yes.
So you can have a PS, a PS1, a PS2, a PS3. It gets all tangled up in these numbers. Don't let that fool you, folks. It's just the reason that's done is to again empower the user. But I must say that Linux is not for the faint of heart, is it?
It's complicated. We all of us really depend on the makers of our Linux distribution having set defaults that we can start out with and grow from.
And how do we learn about the defaults? Just by looking at the man pages and info pages and and doing the question.
And then once you have an environment set up that you particularly like, you can easily migrate that from one machine to another, because all the customizations, or almost all of them, are in text files, which you can easily copy from one machine to another.
Ooh, and if you have a network like one of these little routers that you put together, you can actually do an NFS install. You could install a whole system across the network, couldn't you?
Yes. Yes.
Go ahead.
In fact, I've installed Linux on an S390 mainframe via network.
Really?
Yeah. I had this 390 account, and they were going to let me load Linux on it, but it came on a CD, and they did not have a CD reader on the mainframe. So what I did was get myself a Linux box, put the CD in there, and say, okay, export that to the network. And now I can go to the mainframe and say, okay, go to this Linux box, and it'll tell you what the CD, it will export it for you.
Now, question, Ed, what do you actually do? What is your job title?
Well, currently, my job title is Systems Rationalizer.
What is that?
I got a chance to make that up myself. I did not really make it up. I chose it from a book that I was reading one time. And the best explanation that the author could give for it was that a systems rationalizer looks at what the user wants to accomplish and figures out how to configure or to educate the user or whatever needs to be done to get the machine to behave the way the user expects.
Aha.
So my job is to interpret how to get these machines to do what users really want.
That would be difficult.
Well, sometimes it's challenging, but it's almost always fun.
Mm-hmm. And you use the shell a lot to do some of that, don't you?
Yes. Yeah. I have spent time programming in assembly language and C, but in the last 15 years or so, mostly I have written in shell scripts and occasionally in something like Perl or very, very occasionally back into C.
Mm-hmm. Depends on how fast it needs to be and whether it needs to be interpreted or compiled.
It's been my experience that almost always you can actually accomplish what you want to accomplish in shell faster than you can sit down and compile a C program. Okay. If the program that you're going to do is not going to be executed thousands of times, it's more efficient time-wise for you to do it in an interpretive language where you can rapidly develop it rather than compile it, debug it, and once it's compiled, run it. Because the savings in runtime, unless it's run thousands of times, isn't worth bothering about. The development time ate all that up.
So the old basic language wasn't so dumb after all, was it?
No, and that's part of the principle of why the shell has remained so useful with Unix, is that they have other people have also discovered that it's more efficient to do it in a rapid prototyping language than it is to conform to all the nitpicky details of some lower level, faster language.
Now, would it be easier to write in a lower level, faster language once you try and test it in the shell?
Yes, you can actually take a shell script and go almost literally line by line and do the same sort of things in a Python or C program, and it will just run faster, but it will be doing the same steps.
Okay. And for, it would probably take less time once you do that, once you compile the last version of the program. Well, that's just real neat. We're getting a little away from it again, but that's okay. We're trying to stretch a little bit and show people that, yes, a shell is a viable way of making your Linux box operate the way you want it to run. And that was kind of the reason I asked Ed what he did. Ed, what other kinds of commands would you recommend for a beginner? You running out of steam, are you?
No, there are lots of them. At my home system, when at the shell prompt, you do a tab, it tries to complete the current word. And if you don't have any characters typed in, it reads through all your path directories and says count how many executable commands there are in that path.
Mm-hmm.
And then it reports it to you and says, do you want to see all, in my case, 3,400 and some of these commands? And I said yes.
Oh, okay.
And it invoked more to show me because the commands printed 5 columns per line and several pages for all 3,000 commands.
Yeah, just probably should have used a greater than and a file name there, I think, shouldn't you?
Well, I just was kind of curious as to what they were.
Uh-huh. So you kind of get... Is there any time when you've made a shell routine and you want to improve it, do you ever kind of go through and clean house and delete some that you don't use and put some together that you do use?
That's why I collect scripts into my bin directory.
Now, which bin directory do you
use? My home directory, my home bin.
Uh-huh.
I put some scripts in there, and if the scripts turn out to be useful enough that I constantly use them, I will occasionally at least transfer them to user local bin. so they do not get overwritten by the operating system. Or if I like change my home directory, and then periodically I go through and look, and the scripts that haven't been invoked in a long time, I just remove.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about the ls command. The ls command is a command that we'll be using quite a bit as shell folks, because we're going to want to see what, say, we don't know what's in that local, that home/bin directory, and we want to find out. So tell us a little bit about ls, Ed.
Well, ls will take multiple what's called arguments, which are names of directories or files. You can do files or directories, and will then just echo back to you the names of those by default. But you can give ls options or modifiers of its behavior. One of the ones I use a lot is -l for long.
I do too.
That tells you who owns the file, how big it is, what its mode is, whether it's read, write, or executable by owner, group, or the world. And if it's a directory, it turns out the first character on the line is a D instead of a dash.
Mm-hmm.
And if that first character on the line is a lowercase s, that's a symbolic link that says this file points to somewhere else. And the place it points to may be an additional pointer. Eventually, they're supposed to resolve to a file name.
Okay, is it like a macro, or is it a...
Well, in a Windows environment, it is similar to a desktop shortcut.
Okay.
Because you have a long path, and you want something in the current directory to point to where that long path is, so you don't have to type the full path in. You can just type a shorter name in instead.
Okay, that makes sense now. Go ahead.
Okay, and let's see. We were talking about ls-l.
Mm-hmm.
And if the first character is...
There's a
no.
R and a W and an X. Is that right?
No, before that, there's a D...
An
or
S.
If it's a character device like a TTY, it's a C.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's a block device, it's a B.
Mm-hmm.
Block devices are disk drives. Character devices are TTYs and tape drives.
Uh-huh.
Let's see.
S, of course, is a link.
Also, like a capital S, I believe, is a network socket.
Yeah, that's something we'll get into later.
There are ways for you to talk between programs with sockets that appear as files so that other programs can then open them for read or write without having to have all the kernel. There are structures within the kernel for hooking up a network socket or hooking up to devices like TTYs or disk drives. So the file system enables you to talk to those devices as files so that you can use ordinary commands like you would at the command line in time to be able to read and write those files. you can, don't advise this, but you can do a less space slash DEV slash HDA, and that will begin trying to read the hard disk into the pager.
I don't think we want to do that.
Well, as I say, I don't advise it, but it won't hurt anything.
Can you imagine the big file that would create if you did a greater than and then send it out there? Don't try that at home, folks.
No, you wouldn't want to do a greater than or divert the output of a cat to somewhere on disk.
No, it would fill the disk up.
Yes, with a copy of itself.
Yeah, it would, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it wouldn't last long.
No. Now, if you wanted to do it cheap and dirty with a second drive that was properly formatted, could you do it that way?
Yes, exactly.
You could go
exactly how
you could do
disks are copied within Unix and Linux is to copy the raw device, the character device, from one device over to another, so that HDA gets copied to HDB or B or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You could, theoretically, you could do that as a cron job if you had two large drives, and that way, if one of them crashed, you just exchange them, and there you go.
Yes.
Well, I'm learning, Ed. A cheap version of RAID. So, and that is really interesting. Well,
I mentioned that cron runs a job repeatedly.
Uh-huh.
There's another command called at, and that you can say at 5 p.m., enter, and it will then prompt you for input. And it's looking for a list of shell commands. And then when you're done, you do Control D, which is how you indicate end of file to Unix.
Oh, really?
Yes. By the way, that's changeable. You can reconfigure end of file to be any character you'd like.
Null character.
No, probably not.
I'm just giving you. Wouldn't want to do that.
No, that's used too many places.
Yeah, I know. I was just being very silly.
But as I recall, DOS used to have Control Z.
Yes, they did. And they also had a Control C, which broke out of the script.
Yes, you can. By default, Control C also breaks out of a Linux script or Unix, but some people prefer the delete key for that, and that's configurable by the individual user.
I don't think I want to use the delete key for that. I think if I want to break the script, I want to have at least more than one key down at a time. Yes, this is something I really want to do. Because I'm that clutchy with a keyboard. Okay.
Makes sense.
Anything else that you have for us, Ed?
Well, I think that right now I would like to take a little break.
Me too. Be nice to get something cool to drink. I'm getting a little thirsty. So
yes,
let me just give a quick note. If you can run and get Mike real quick, tell him we're finished with the archive part of this. We are.
Mike should be here within seconds.
All right. Let's finish this particular archive. It is now 10 minutes past the hour on April the 3rd.
This is May.
What do I keep saying April for? wrong universe here, Ed. Wrong universe. You remember last week we got into this thing about nano and micro. I must be in a nano or pico universe when everything's April. Okay. All right. So let's go see if we can find us a Coke machine or something. It is 10 minutes past the hour. You're listening to the Kansas City Linux Users Group.